Hey, all right. Welcome back, everybody, to your favorite new podcast, Leonard's Flick Fix. I'm your host, Leonard Cox, and on this podcast, I bring you essential movie summaries, packed with all the key plot points, character insights, cinematic details, and those big moments. This is where you get the full story in a quick, easy format, so you can stay in the loop with all the movie talk between your friends and family.
He summarizes movies so that way you don't have to go pay for them or go to the movies, and you can just listen to them in your car with your downtime. Flick.
Let's go ahead and dive right in to today's movie, Wolves, the crime thriller directed by John Watts and starring the George Clooney and the Brad Pitt. This had a budget of $200 million and was not released in theaters, folks. This is only on Apple TV. Absolutely crazy budget for just a streaming platform. And it got a lot of attention because of that budget. And as always, I'll go ahead and read the IMDb description summary of the movie. Two rival fixers cross paths when they're both called in to help cover up a prominent New York official's misstep. Over the explosive night, they'll have to set aside their petty grievances and their egos to finish the job. We start with a beautiful opening of the sun setting over the New York City skyline. Very beautiful city, I have noticed in this film. And then we hear a voiceover of a woman screaming and shouting after someone had fallen and glass is broken, clearly. And as we zoom into the apartment, we just hear someone panicking, screaming, and clearly by themselves of some subtype. And as we zoom into like a penthouse suite at the hotel, we actually see our first actress, and that is Holly Flax from The Office. Let's call her Holly. Holly is freaking out and panicking, still continuing sweating, and has a little bit of blood on her. And we slowly pan down to see that there is a boy face planted on the floor and has blood leaking out from under him. Not viciously fast. The blood isn't like oozing out necessarily, but clearly seeming to be dead. And our actress, Holly, she's just beside herself and trying to figure out what's going on. We're very confused. But as we were zooming into the skyline, we realized that she is fairly a famous political figure of some type, but we haven't quite figured that out yet. So as she's trying to figure out what to do, as anyone would in a situation like this, and we don't know what happened or how anything happened because we were zooming in, she grabs her phone out from underneath the seemingly dead body and starts scrolling through her phone to see who she would call. She would call her brother. Would she call her father? She's trying to figure it out. And all the way at the bottom, we zoom in and see that there's this contact that just has two brackets. It's just two brackets. And she goes ahead and decides to call the two bracket phone number. She calls it, and then it goes like, beep, boop, boop, this number is discontinued, blah, 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 and then hangs up. So she freaks out even more because clearly there was no one that she was is comfortable enough to call to answer these crazy situations like this. But then all of a sudden her phone rings, scares her, jumps her. And the person on the end of the line goes, how'd you get this number? And then she goes, someone gave this to me. Someone I was supposed to trust into if I ever got into a very bad, really, really bad situation, I should call this number. And so the person at the end of the line is like, how do I trust you? And she's like, I don't know, but I trust the person that called me. And the man that I'm supposed to talk to is apparently like an expert and a professional, and he is the best that there ever was. And he can predict the future, and he's like this amazing guy. So the guy on the other line says, okay, I want you to stay there, do absolutely nothing. I'll be there shortly. And as the other guy is talking, we slowly zoom in, and we learn that the other guy on the line is George Clooney. So now we're focused on George Clooney's character, and he seems to be some type of fixer in some type of way. So he hangs up the phone, gets in his nice car, and drives through the street as the credits roll, and park, you know, a block away from the hotel that she's at. He grabs his bag, he goes in, and walks into the hotel, and walks up to her room. He knocks on the door, she opens the door, he asks, have you done anything that I told you not to do? Have you called anybody? Have you contacted anybody? She says, no, I've been sitting here patiently, quietly, whatever. So the first thing George Clooney does is he goes and asks her a few more questions. And as he's asking Holly these questions, he feels the pulse of the person on the floor and seemingly is dead. We learn that Holly is a DA and she's running for candidacy and she's in some kind of campaign and she really can't have this happen. She explicitly says that this is not a prostitute. I just met him at the bar and I asked him to come up and he was jumping on the bed, fell off and fell onto the bar cart in glass. And, you know, this is where he's at now. And she keeps reiterating that she didn't do this. I did not do this. And she's freaking out and she's, you know, makes sense. Of course, if anyone saw that, I would be freaking out as well. So George Clooney just comforts her and allows her to know that what would you be doing at something like this? She says that I would be at home with my daughter watching TV, most likely, if I wasn't doing this. So he says, okay, this is what I want you to do. I want you to, you know, be home with your daughter and act like this never happened, and I will take care of everything. And then she's still freaking out, you know, trying to figure out how to calm herself down. Then, all of a sudden, someone seemingly at the door somehow kind of knocks. So George Clooney again asked her, did you call anyone? Did you talk to anybody? She says no. So neither one of them now know who's at this door. And in comes our other character, Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt walks in. George Clooney peeks his head in and they go like, who are you? And then Brad Pitt goes, who are you? And then Holly comes out and goes like, who are you? So everyone's a little confused on who's who. And all Holly wants to do is just like not freak out and not worry about this. But then Brad Pitt essentially says, I'm here to fix your problem. And Holly's like, he's here to fix my problem. And so then we kind of have this weird understanding, like for some weird reason, Brad Pitt and George Clooney are doing the same job and it's a very secretive job, but somehow Brad Pitt shows up and is ready to do the job. So then we learn that Brad Pitt is hired by the hotel that they're in. It's a brand new hotel in New York and the owner really wants to make sure that there's nothing crazy going on in their hotel and doesn't want to, like, you know, ruin business. And then he looks up and points at a hidden camera that is in the hotel suite, which is extremely illegal, obviously. But the owner wants to make sure that there's nothing that would, let's say, get back to her or the property in any way. She hires Brad Pitt as her fixer, to clean up any crazy messes that seem to have happened. So as these guys are trying to figure all this out, the phone rings. Brad Pitt answers, and we learn that it's his boss, Pam. His boss is essentially saying, what is he doing here? This is kind of off. You need to take care of this. You're my guy. Handle this. And then she says on the phone, hand me to Holly. Holly answers the phone, and then they kind of get into this discussion secretly in another room. That we don't know what they discuss. And as she's on the phone in like a, you know, separate room, the fixers, George and Brad, are essentially just awkwardly looking at each other, confused about what they're doing, kind of studying each other a little bit. It's very comedic, very funny, and it's very, dull. Anyways, Holly also wants to make sure that the tape that this person has clearly been secretly recording is clear. And she also wants to make sure that the guy that she called, Holly's guy, that he's going to make sure everything's done because he was, you know, she was promised by his guy that it'll get fixed. And Pam, the hotel owner, she's saying, well, my guy promises me that he's going to get this fixed. So we've got to figure something out. So they come to the conclusion and figure out that these guys have to work together to satisfy both of their clients. They both immediately say, absolutely not. George Clooney packs up his bags and he's about to leave. Brad Pitt grabs the phone and talks to Pam, pleading that she has to do this. Holly pleads with George Clooney and essentially is like, you have to do this, please. You promised. If you take the job, you said that you would do it. So he took the job and he says, fine, I'll do it. So he starts asking her more questions about what happened. We learn more about how the boy got up into the room and, you know, it wasn't a prostitute. It seems like they was just, you know, going to fool around and he got tipsy, fell off the bed and died. So then Brad and George hand her some clothes in a comedic way because they both have separate clothes and they both have like a very similar style on how to handle things. They send Holly on her way and George Clooney and Brad start cleaning up the mess, essentially. Although Brad is saying, my job is to make sure the hotel is safe. So I'm going to make sure that you do your job. So that way my job is done well too. So Brad just essentially just sits back, drinks a Coca-Cola and watches George Clooney clean up and all this craziness. And as Brad is sitting and chilling, he notices something behind the lamp. It's like a weird stuffed animal. He pulls out this stuffed animal that's got a keychain connected to a backpack and he goes, shit. Because he looks inside the bag. We don't know what's inside the bag. And then George Clooney looks in and he goes, shit. So then all of a sudden we see George Clooney pull out like just bricks of this crazy, probably heroin, cocaine, some like bricks of drugs in this backpack. So now it's just became like a really, it's a much more complicated fix, let's say, quote unquote, for these guys. They're very frustrated that they have to deal with a drug case now, as well as, you know, a murder, or not murder, but, you know, someone who's died, I guess, you know, it wasn't necessarily a murder, but. So then they kind of plan out how they're supposed to do this and they call Pam, Brad's employer, and like, there's drugs here. This is, ridiculous. What are we supposed to do here? And then Pam's like, I definitely don't want people looking for those drugs through my hotel. So you're going to have to be smart about how you dispose of the drugs. I want you to deliver the drugs to the proper people. So that way they're not going to come chase me or anything like that. So clearly the boy was some kind of drug guy or delivering drugs somehow. That's all. I mean, it was his backpack, it seems like. And, you know, things just went super haywire because if someone's not getting their drug delivery, something's crazy. So, you know, obviously there's a lot more risk at play now. So George Clooney says to Brad, focus on the body first. We'll deal with the drug second. So George Clooney does some cool shit, bags up the body like he's done it 1,000 times, trying to show off in front of Brad because clearly they both think that they're the best and there's no one like themselves. So they're showing off each other in front of each other on how they handle cleaning up, like fixes, you know, like how to fix stuff. So then they, you know, go into the garage and they load up the body into George Clooney's car. And another thing I should note is that as George Clooney's doing, like kind of taking lead, quote unquote, right now, because, you know, it's his job that he has to do. We're noticing that George Clooney is like on lock. He's literally got everything down to a T. He knows exactly what he's doing, even down to like the parking lot where, you know, it seems like he's done it a billion times over and over again. So he's obviously a clear professional and pro. And Brad is kind of noticing that he's maybe reliable, but he, you know, Brad Pitt also has his own little things here and there that are pretty impressive as well that George Clooney doesn't give a shit about, essentially. Also, I should mention that I'm referring to their names like Brad and George because they are not given names in the movie. They don't give each other names because they obviously don't trust each other. No one knows any names between Brad and George. We don't know their actual act, like their character names in the movie. Supposedly I think it's Jack and Nick in the scripts, but we don't hear them actually get called by their actual names, which is kind of interesting. So as they're bickering on, you know, what to do next kind of thing, and you know, as they're talking in the parking garage, we find out that the dead body is of course not dead. He's moving all of a sudden in the trunk, and they realize that he's alive and probably OD'd somehow. So they have to go to a doctor of some type. So then they're bickering about which doctor to go to. So George Clooney says, my car, my person. So they go, he calls his person and his person doesn't answer. So Brad Pitt says, all right, you know, my person it is then. So then they go to Brad's person. Turns out it's the same person. You know, it's I'm obviously summarizing how this is comedic and how it's kind of funny in here and there. But, you know, the reveal of how George's person is the same as Brad's like weird doctor in Chinatown is kind of funny. The doctor kind of resists letting them in. But after they plead that they have like an OD child in the back of their car, essentially, she's like, is he really OD'd? Is he, you know, dying right now? And after a lot of bickering and funny commentary, she accepts and brings the boy in. And in all of this movement, we do see a weird glare from like some Chinese dude in Chinatown looking over at Brad Pitt, kind of weird and strange like. But as the doctor is looking over the boy and he's, you know, alive and all that, the bickering between Brad and George is clearly not gonna fly with the doctor. So, you know, she kicks him out and she works in the body as they get a drink, talk at the bar. But again, we learn nothing about these guys, essentially, that they may know of each other from something somehow. And as they're talking, the boy wakes up, sprints out of the like weird Chinatown basement that they're in, and just starts sprinting through the streets of Manhattan, like almost butt ass naked. He's just in underwear and socks, just like sprinting throughout the city. He like, cause he's still all cracked out or whatever, apparently. And it's like this huge, like 3 to 5 minute chase scene between Brad and George taking different decisions on how to chase this guy, both equally valid, through Manhattan. And they end up at the very end teaming up together to tag him and get him into the car. So then they're discussing, where do we go to like interrogate this guy and try to figure out what's going on? Because clearly there's a loose end that they have to try to figure out and, you know, fix, because it's getting real crazy. So they end up going to a motel, some really, really gross motel with like cockroaches and mice. And this is where like their repartee, you know, comes into play, where they're trying to figure out how to interrogate this guy as a team, because they're both lone wolves. Wolf, nice. And so they're, you know, trying to figure it out. They're him and Han. The boy's not cracking at all. And then they're like, all right, we got to change it up. So they go in there like really bad cop, and he immediately cracks. And the boy is a very funny, very innocent, honestly sweet guy who's just like extremely dull and dumb. But tells them that he has a friend, Diego, who lost his mom. And because he was the friend, he offered to help Diego move the drugs, you know, to this location, essentially. And he was supposed to wait for this pager to give him the location to deliver the drugs. So now essentially what we do is we have to go on a mission, George, Brad, and this boy, to go find the pager at this club that he's to go, supposed to pick up, the boy's supposed to go pick up, get the pager, and then get paged on the pager to get the address of where to make the drop. So as they're outside the club ready to go in, George and Brad both notice a guy, and they both look at each other and like crouch down in the car like they're about to get shot. It's super creepy. And then they're like, oh God, is that who I think it is? Turns out it's like some weird mobster guy that they both seem to have worked for in the past, like some Croatian mobster dude who, if he found out that they were together, he would have them both killed immediately, given that he has a lot of secrets between the two of them. And you know, you don't want to mess with something like that. So it got even a little bit more intense on how to go at, you know, proceeding with their plan. So none of them trust each other. None of them trust the boy to not run away. Brad doesn't trust George to like stay with the drugs. George doesn't trust Brad to stay with the kid or the drugs. So they all decide that we're going to sneak into this club together as a group, so that way everyone stays with everyone. And we also learn that there's some witty banter that, you know, the boy's like, how long have you guys been partners? It's so cool that you guys do this, you know, and they're definitely not partners. They want to make that very clear and obvious. And but they're very similar. They wear the same stuff. They look the same. Like, it's obvious that they're like connected in some way. All right. So we got a really intense scene in this club situation now, where the boy is essentially left alone, but the Brad and George, you know, fixers are on the sides of the party. Like, it's like this weird wedding of some type. And we believe it's the wedding of the Croatian mobster guy's daughter. So that's why the Croatian guy's there. And it's seemingly that's what's going on. So the boy realizes that the pager is at the bar. So it's a very eerie scene of the boy, like, you know, maneuvering through a bunch of mobsters that he has no idea are like super dangerous and crazy. And the two fixers are trying not to be seen by that mobster, because if they're seen together, then they're essentially instantly dead. So the boy is able to find the pager, but for some reason, the bartender would not give him the pager. So the boy just like leaps over the counter, leaps over the bar without the bartender noticing, grabs the pager. And he's like, all right, guys, I got it, showing them like across the room that he got it. And as that happens, he gets like captured and abducted, because some guy's like, why were you reaching over the bar? You know, we don't know if this is a mobster, or we don't know if this was just like a bouncer, but he gets grabbed and goes out. So George and Brad both look at each other and like, all right, we got to go grab this kid. And he's got the pager for the drugs, or else we're kind of screwed. So they both head for the exits, and they're separate exits. But as they're heading for the exits, some dance happens during this wedding. It seems like maybe it's Jewish, maybe it's, you know, something else, where a bunch of dudes come in through the exit, and like, it's like they essentially like trap by accident trap George and Brad and get them involved into this funny comedic dance where it's like all the dudes get in a circle and dance and have like this very specific dance. And they're in the middle of the floor and everyone's watching. And it gets creepier and more eerie because we notice that the Croatian mobster guy is like now notices one of them and he's kind of confused why he's there. But it's like, okay, he hasn't noticed the other guy dancing across the line. And as they dance, the dance starts like weaving the characters next to each other. And all of a sudden we get to see that the Croatian mobster now notices that they're both together at this wedding and they see each other. And so I think they instinctively both decide to pull a gun on each other. So Brad pulls a gun on George. George pulls a gun on Brad to appear to the Croatian guy that they don't know each other. And they're essentially like, who the hell is this? Dimitri. Dimitri's the name of the Croatian mobster. And he's like, do you set up a guy to set up on me or whatever? And, you know, makes a big scene in the wedding to try to throw off Dimitri that they don't know each other. It works. Dimitri seems to be like, okay, settle down, guys. This is a huge misunderstanding. You both have done jobs for me before. No worries. We'll just move on. Not a big deal. So they're able to maneuver out of that. But as they leave, the guns were taken from them at the wedding, obviously. And one of the mobster's agents notices, glances that they're identical guns. So he believes that they're buddies and partners. But we don't really hear Dimitri notice that. So there's a little suspicion that maybe they haven't quite gotten out of the Croatian mobster's hands, Dimitri, but no big deal. So then George goes to the car to hopefully go find where the boy ran off to if he ran away, but the boy didn't run away at all. Turns out the boy wants to finish this job because he's got, you know, an exam next week and he wants to make sure that there's nothing that bad happens to anybody because he's so innocent. So we learn that no one's really running away from anybody. They're all a team at this point. And George, Brad, and the boy now have the pager and go grab some grub. Okay, so while they're at the diner grubbing up, you know, it's really just the boy eating, and George and Brad are very professional, obviously, and just sitting, you know, kind of annoyed by how the boy's eating, but whatever. You know, and the boy goes like, so how does someone get into your line of work, you know? And then Brad turns to the boy and he's like, what kind of line of work do you think we're in? And he's like, you guys fix stuff. Right? Like if there's something wrong, you'll go out and fix it. And you know, that way everything can keep going and moving on. And I'm really thankful for you guys. Essentially, he's saying, you know, he's like, thanks for helping me. You know, I was in trouble, so I appreciate your fix. And then he's like, okay, I got to go pee. So then Brad and George share a look like, this kid is sweet, but he doesn't realize that he is not going to live. Like, we can't let this happen. We're fixers, we're professionals. And he is clearly a loose end, like clearly a loose end. And we're going to have to kill him at some point. So then Brad and George kind of have a discussion about how, George, this is your job. You got to do this. And George is like, I'll be able to do it. No worries. And Brad's like, well, I got you if you don't, you know. They're essentially now showing each other a little bit of compassion because they both really don't want to do this, but they know it has to be done. And then George comes up with the idea that we're going to send the boy in once the address comes in. And he's going to deliver the drugs. And honestly, the job will just get finished on its own. The, you know, George and Brad both probably believe that this boy is just going to get killed by the drug dealers anyways. So let's just let the guy finish his job and let him, you know, let's not worry about it on our end kind of thing. Okay. And I forgot to mention that George's fixer character, he is like a suspicious guy and he likes to solve the problems like fully and understand what it is. And Brad really just wants to just, you know, get the job done as completely as possible. So George suspects that the drugs that this boy has is stolen from an Albanian gang shipment. And he doesn't know how the boy has it or why he has it, but he is convinced that the drugs he has is from the Albanians. So just a little side note there. So the pager goes off. They get the address for the drop off. Okay, so then the boy and Brad and George get in their car and they go to the drop off and they essentially say to the boy, all right, you go in there, make the drop, finish the job. And the boy's like, okay, guys, I won't let you down. You're going to wait for me, right? And then they both like reluctantly say yes, because obviously they know that he's just essentially walking into their deaths. And it's a really uncomfortable situation where it's a slow walk as the boy gets into this really shady area, gets let in, and George and Brad are like, ah, shit, this sucks. So as they're about to go save the boy, like as they're about to leave the car and say, fuck it, I'm going to go save the boy. This is just not right. A bunch of cars show up, and we learn it's the Albanian army. The Albanian drug army of sorts, essentially, shows up and pulls in, and it's just a mass shooting fight. It's like a huge shooting spree in there. So we learn, I mean, we feel like obviously the boy is going to die, and you know, the drugs are going to take care of themselves. So as they're about to leave, they get a gunshot through the back of their window, and we see that it's the Croatian mobster's agent guy with a few of his agents just machine gunning their car, like just spraying it. So they're able to outmaneuver like the gun shots and get to the back of the car and, you know, flee the shooting, but they're still being shot at consecutively by the Croatians while the Albanians are shooting whoever the drug dealers are that the boy was supposed to go to, wherever, you know. So the George and Brad are obviously extremely trained, so they wait out the gun shooting until they have to reload. They pop the mobsters while they're reloading, and they survive. And they notice that the shooting has stopped in the Albanian and other drug dealing war that was happening. And they notice a few guys are like piled up dead outside. So clearly, a lot of they all must have like pretty much died except for a few. So they go in there sneakily because they have to confirm that the boy is dead. They're very good at their job, so they have to make sure that the loose end is loose. So they're reluctantly looking at all the dead bodies, like honestly hoping not it's the boy, but also hoping it's the boy at the same time so that they can just move on. And it's just huge, just murderness. Like there's just death everywhere. There's just a bunch of dead bodies everywhere, and everyone seems to be dead. Like everyone seems to be dead. And so they're like trying to find the boy, and all of a sudden you get him popping out of the trunk of a car that was parked in that garage, and we notice that the boy survived. The boy survived. So they're both like, son of a bitch. Like, even the audience is like, I didn't want to have to see this. Of course we have to see that. And of course he's just holding on to the drugs as well, you know, hidden in the car. So he's like explaining to them how it happened, but he's, you know, a klutz and, you know, clumsy. So it's funny, and Brad and George don't even want to hear it. So George is looking extremely like putting down the puppy dog kind of eyes. And he's like, so then the boy's like, so what do we do now? And George is like, finish the job, you know, make it look like, you know, you weren't here and place the drugs on whatever. So the boy is like, okay, I'm going to make the story. So he like lays out all the dead bodies properly while he's laying out the drugs. And as he's, you know, telling the story to George and George puts the gun not directly on the back of his head, so the boy doesn't know he's about to get shot, but he's like point blank range, ready to pull the trigger. And it's like super sad because we know he's got to pull the trigger. You know, we can't leave a loose end, really. And so, and we also notice that Brad is looking at George, making sure he pulls the trigger, but also reluctantly not wanting it to happen. But anyways, George is about to do it. We get a close up with the trigger and he pulls away at the last second. And then boom, a gunshot from Brad Pitt happens. And like, we all look at each other's faces and it's just like, oh, horrible. Yeah, I know Brad had to do it or whatever. And we zoom in on the kid, you know, assuming he's just about to die. But we learn that Brad didn't shoot the kid. He shot the drugs to make it look more real. And guess what was in the drugs but a tracker. The Albanians had put a tracker in their drugs because in case it got stolen, which it did, they could track it down. So that's how there was this big all-out war, is because the drugs were tracked once the pager was activated. So once the pager got sent the address, the tracker was armed at that point, and then they dropped it off at this location. A big war happened, and Brad and George both say, screw it, we're going to keep the boy alive. We'll figure out how to make it, you know, work somehow. We've interrogated people before. We can really make sure that, you know, whatever. So yay, woohoo, the boy lives. Seemingly, and Brad and George are both alive, and we learned that's how the big war happened, because there was a tracker in the drugs, and they were like, oh, rookie mistake, we should have checked the drugs, we're dumb. So they explained to the boy, obviously, that they never existed, you know, you can't tell anybody about this, and we have to talk to your father, you know, because your father's going to want to know where you've been, blah, blah, blah. And so it's seeming like they interrogate the boy, they interrogate the father of the boy, and the father's just like freaked out, and clearly they said something, and interrogate him to the point where we obviously know that he won't say a goddamn thing, neither will the boy. And so at the end of it, they're like, you want to go grab some breakfast? Because the sun is starting to rise. All this happened in one night, which was a crazy night. So we notice that they're becoming friends, you know, in some type. And on the way out, Brad's like, oh, you got some blood on your sweater. And George is like, oh. And then he looks and he's like holding his heart, you know, he's like, oh. And he's like feeling the blood on his sweater. And we realize that he's been shot, maybe. He's like, oh, shit, what's going on? And we notice for the first time that Brad shows compassion. He looks at him like, oh my God, no, you've been shot. Maybe I'm going to be upset about this, you know? And then George Clooney just flips him the bird and makes him laugh. So he hadn't been shot whatsoever. So there was just that's the kind of whimsical stuff that has been going back and forth. We thought George was about to die. It was about to be really sad. Not at all. Not at all. He's totally fine. Flips off Brad and they just giggle a little bit. And Brad just goes like, fucker, I didn't care. Just letting you know. And he's like, yeah, sure you didn't. Whatever. You know, so back and forth. And then they go grab some breakfast where we expect it to be the end of the movie. But we learn, a whole lot. This is quote unquote the ending of this movie. And I'm going to explain this as best as humanly possible. And I'll explain why it's hard to explain in a moment. So as they're about to say their goodbyes and they say like, wow, well, that was a night. You know, you think the kid's going to talk? And then Brad's and George are like, no, he's not going to talk. And being the lone wolves that they are, they're not going to like ask for a second date or partner up or anything like that. And as George is about to leave, he goes and he says, what made you stay in the job? What did Pam say to make you stay in the job? And then Brad says, she said I had no choice. Once a man takes a job, you got to do the job. And that's the same thing that Holly said to George, which is interesting. And it's clearly some type of motto that they both have. And so once he says that, George Clooney was leaving the diner and then stops in his tracks, turns around, and then we find out something a little strange. George asks Brad, there was a phone call that you had in the car that you didn't take. You know, there was a phone call that rang and they both had a phone call and we both noticed it was from some random weird looking bracket ID caller. So they both had a phone call earlier in the movie that wasn't very important at the time. And so George is like, Brad, what was that phone call? And he's like, you know, why do you care? What are you talking about? And Brad and George is like, I got the same phone call. Are we, you know, working for the same guy, ? You know? And they're like, wait a minute, hold on. The guy is like how they address their boss of some kind. So it's seeming like we find out that, yes, they're working together as they banter back and forth about how they're employed and somehow. They seem similar, so it makes sense. They have the same tasks. They do the same chores. They were willing to do each other's things because probably did the same thing themselves. It made sense. So we learn that they both have the same boss. They both work under the guy. Okay, so now just listen in to how this ending happens. You go ahead and listen. And note that it's going to be extremely confusing because they literally talk about the conclusion of the movie over each other because they're that similar that they don't even want to wait for each other to finish each other's sentences. So it's extremely confusing. So I'm going to walk you through the ending, so don't worry, but listen in.
Well, that was a night. Yeah.
They're both looking at each other like they're gonna fall in love kind of thing, and this is where the emotion and the music comes into play.
Okay. All right, then. So what did she say to you? Get you to work with me, what'd she say? She had a whole leverage. She said that I didn't have a choice.
So Brad Pitt's employer said that he didn't have a choice.
Take a job, you give your word, and that word's the measure of the man.
Brad Pitt says this, and then George Clooney is about to leave, but then is like, wait, what the hell? That's what I say.
Who called you?
What?
In the car to June's. Who called you?
June is the Chinatown doctor.
Who's your guy?
My guy?
The guy that Pam got your number from. Your guy.
So she must have called him.
But then why call me?
Who called
you? You're saying the DA got your number?
So the person, Holly, the DA, got your number because the guy gave it to her. So they have the same guy. So the same guy brought them to the same place.
We have the same guy? We both have the same guy. But why does he care? It's just a cleanup job.
He doesn't.
Unless you know about the drug. The
kid's dead, can't make the drop. So he calls us.
One at a time, but nobody answers.
So he sent someone else.
Chinatown.
Sees the kid's alive.
Hard to miss.
Except back on track.
We're on our way to Dimitri's.
Would have killed us. Except
he didn't fool Dimitri. He was tipped off.
Bodyguard didn't get the memo.
Dimitri's the Croatian mobster.
Albanians don't make a move.
The tracker's not even on
the page.
It's all a setup.
It looks like Granger's trying to move the stolen
drugs. Albanians go to war with Lagrange.
No company shuts down. People
get arrested.
It's tough on crime.
It's clear.
I know a real deal to clean up.
Great things to come.
No wonder they wanted the cameras in the road.
He wanted to know who knew.
Kid turns the ambush into a shootout.
We were supposed to take the fall.
You didn't think we'd send the kid in?
We were getting cleaned.
Okay, so LaGrange was the drug dealer who stole from the Albanians, and that's the drugs that we had that he was going to deliver. So the war was between the LaGrange and the Albanians, and then the Croatian agent, he was the one who didn't get the memo, the tip off from the guy that that this was all one big massive setup to essentially clean out the entire drug rule and those two. So the guy, quote unquote, is essentially doing his job to clean out both Brad and George and the entire drug lord world in the New York, so that way he, the guy, could essentially own everything. And you know, he was just had this masterful, crazy big plan that just got a little bit of a wrench in it, just because these two guys, Brad and George, wouldn't go in to go kill the boy. So the guy underestimated the compassion that they both had a little bit. Okay, so what an absolutely crazy ending that was, in my opinion. They did this on purpose, I believe. I believe that they made it seem very difficult to understand at the very end, because they also left a lot of unopened endings, right? Like, who is the guy? Why are they getting cleaned? Why are they getting killed? You know, and, you know, that's not even the end of the movie, technically. The end of the movie is they look out the window and they are extremely suspicious that there's some, you know, people after them, obviously. And then they realize the diner is all empty all of a sudden. And, you know, they hide underneath the booth and they get their guns and they're realizing they're about to be in a massive war, because, you know, if they get out of it, they'll tell each other these names, you know. So at the end of the movie, they're buddies about, you know, they have to be together now because they're about to get, you know, gunned down in a big, massive, you know, fight in a diner. So that's the end of the movie. So I took it as, yes, this was a confusing way to describe something, because they literally are talking over each other and it's crazy. Something also important is, as we're looking through the city, through New York, all the TVs, a lot of flyers, our DA, Holly Flax, the very beginning, the lady who, you know, was in trouble, her slogan is, keep crime down, essentially. So it's interesting that, you know, this is all about crime and the DA is involved in all of this world. So it's kind of open-ended if she was involved at all to, you know, maybe she was involved in, you know, taking down the drug world as well. You know, you have no idea who's in charge of all this, essentially. But we do know that the two guys were employed by the same guy, and that same guy was watching them the entire time, had the footage to blackmail if needed to blackmail for the DA or whatever it was, you know, in the hotel of all the craziness. But yeah, absolutely nuts. Really funny, very dry humor, like The Office, honestly. And I think it's interesting they use Holly Flax and they talk about Pam. I don't know if there's a link there or not, but very, very funny, very creative ending, but also kind of flopped as well, seeming like it's not getting as greater reviews as people would like. But I really enjoyed the humor, honestly. It was very Brad and George Clooney-esque, where they honestly look like they just played themselves. They seem so comfortable in the roles. I also think that the boy played a fantastic job. I think Holly Flax's actress, Amy, you know, she did a fantastic job as well. Just a cool movie. I definitely think it's going to take a lot of watches just for that bit ending to really understand what was going on. You know, clearly the guy had been watching and pawning this entire time. Like I said, they spent $200 million on something like this. And we're still getting, it's a brand new release. It was released just this weekend. So in September 20th. So can't quite know how much it's made yet, but I do not believe it's going to reach $200 million, especially not in theaters, because it's not in theaters. It's just for Apple TV. Another reason why Hollywood's kind of going down the drain is they just dropped $200 million on this, and it's only going to Apple TV. Who's watching that? Why did they spend that much money on a very interesting crime thriller comedy? But, you know, again, I think this was pretty cool. It got 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes hasn't quite released anything yet. But I would probably give it like an 83, given that the ending was so hard to take. And I've had to like really do my research on getting it right, the ending, because it's so open to anticipation and so open for the audience to understand what's going on. But 83% in my eyes, I think that's not a horrible rating at all for that. But again, $200 million is a lot of money to throw into a streaming platform. So anyways, guys, I hope you got through all the way to the end. I'm trying to keep them a little shorter so that way you guys can listen to a lot more. I'll keep trying to release as much as possible. Keep sending in the recommendations. Apple TV is a hard one for people to get, so I'll try to cover a lot of Apple TV movies for you. But keep calling, keep messaging. Follow me at Leonard RR Cox on Instagram. DM me through that if you need to recommend some stuff, guys. Okay. So thanks so much. Be careful of those drugs, children. All right. Be careful of two really sexy old dudes who apparently just fix things, and be careful of the guy. All right. The guy might come for you. All right. Have a good one, guys.
He summarizes his movies so that way you don't have to go pay for them or go to the movies, and you can just listen to them in your car with your downtime.